Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, the serene inner sanctum of militant moderation, where every day we chant Alan's mantra, folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I really have to work on my Mongolian throat singing, and then I can do that intro 100% correct. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Please check out our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and showtimes. Well, the inner sanctum of militant moderation may be a serene place, but I regret to inform you that there is once again strife between Donald Trump and Elon Musk. The relationship took a turn for the worse about a month after they patched things up, and it's the same problem, basically. Elon Musk is still beside himself about the big, beautiful bill, which he says does nothing to cut all the garbage government spending he found when he was with the Department of Government Efficiency, and he is railing against President Trump and against the Republican Party, which he leads, and saying there really is no constituency for fiscal responsibility after all. He feels he was lied to and told the Republicans were serious. They're not. And he says that we live in a one-party country, the Porky Pig Party. So pork spending, of course, is when politicians spend money from the Treasury for their own constituents and special interests and that sort of thing. So he says the whole thing is just a bunch of pigs feasting at the federal trough. And nobody is really serious about it doing anything about spending. He was especially angry that they're going to increase the debt ceiling again in the big, beautiful bill by $5 trillion, which these days is not as much money as it used to be. But that's still a lot of money. And Musk was on social media and he said, why do we have a debt ceiling, basically? And he's not the first one to ask that question, believe me. But he said, why do we have a debt ceiling if we just raise it every time? It's all just a pantomime show, pretending to be fiscally responsible while spending just keeps climbing higher and higher and higher into orbit. So after Musk got angry about this elaborate government spending, Trump fired back. And Trump, for one thing, told reporters he's thinking about deporting Elon Musk. Now, he said he's going to have to take a look at deporting him after his angry posts and his threats to perhaps start a new party after he talked about the Porky Pig Party. Elon talked about starting an America party that would be more serious about fiscal spending. And then Trump, not only did he say he might deport Elon Musk, he said we might have to sic the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, on Elon himself. Because, as Trump pointed out, electric vehicles are Musk's bread and butter, and they are a very heavily subsidized project. The transition to electric vehicles is in no sense of the word organic. It was not based on consumer demand ever. It's all been driven by government spending and regulations and an attempt to basically force the public to buy electric cars. And even with all of that government muscle behind the phony EV revolution, Musk is the only one that ever really made any money off of it with Tesla. The other electric cars have all been pretty spectacular failures, but Tesla sell pretty well and they make money for Musk. So this is all looking pretty ugly between the two of them. And sitting here watching all of this, watching Trump maybe talk about sending Elon off to Alligator Alcatraz. That's where Trump is today. He's in Alligator Alcatraz, which is the new camp they put together for illegal migrants in the middle of the Everglades in Florida. And they put this thing together in 9 days. I live in Florida, and this is why we're the can-do state. And your New Yorks, your California, your Illinois are just helpless basket cases. Like, you know, basically blobs on the couch that can barely sit up to change the remote channel on their TV. But down here in Florida, we get stuff done. So they built Alligator Alcatraz in 9 days flat. And they said they could have done it in three, except for some regulatory holdups. So a regulatory hurdle in Florida these days means your giant camp that you're building takes you 9 days instead of three. That's our idea of a regulatory holdup. And meanwhile, Gavin Newsom farts away billions of dollars on a train and doesn't lay a single inch of track for 20 years. But that's what it's like in Florida. So maybe Elon's going to go to Alligator Alcatraz if Trump has really had enough of him. And looking at these two fighting over this, I get where both of them are coming from. And I really sympathize with Elon Musk's frustration, because it's me. I've been writing punditry for, 15, 16 years now as a professional. And in all that time, I, like Elon Musk, have been watching them pretend to care about the debt ceiling and then just raise it every single time by gigantic amounts of money. And nothing ever gets cut and nothing ever gets reduced. And when somebody comes along with a seemingly very reasonable proposition to reduce spending, like the penny plan. Remember that one? Penny plan. That was from 2012, 13, I think, when that idea was floated. I think Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, was a big voice behind the penny plan. Just cut a penny off every dollar of federal spending, and that would balance the budget in a certain amount of time. And for that proposal, the people that backed it were called lunatics. You can't do that. That's extremism. You'll kill 52 billion people if you cut a penny off the dollar on government spending. And of course, the dirty little secret there is that, sure, it's just a penny off the dollar on spending, but to get even that, you would have to halt the growth of government spending, which is like a gigantic freight train barreling down the side of a mountain with rocket engines on the side of it. And just halting the growth of government spending would be apocalyptic compared to the way things normally work in Washington. And then you cut 1% of spending on top of a halt to growth, and oh boy, it's a nuclear bomb going off in Washington. So, we've been watching this drama play out for a long time, and I get where Elon Musk is coming from. Now, in my case, I wrote about it many, many times throughout my career, and I've lamented the irresponsible spending, the fact that nobody can seem to stop it, and the alarming fact that we're getting to the end of this game. The edge of the cliff is in sight, folks. I mean, we're getting to the point where hyperinflation is just going to start wrecking the economy if we don't rein government spending in. We don't have much time left. I mean, we're down to one administration, two, maybe three, before the disaster becomes inevitable and unstoppable. And still, nobody's taking it all that seriously. Here's Elon Musk. And unlike me, he wasn't just writing articles and such. He went out and put his money where his mouth is. He went out there and got the Department of Government Efficiency going. He worked personally night and day on DOGE with all of his people. He put a lot of money into this because he lost a lot of money. The left went after him hammer and tongs. He became hero. He was a left-wing hero, an environmental hero. He was the electric car guy. And all of a sudden, in the 10 minutes, he was the devil right next to J.K. Rowling, the Harry Potter lady that they turned on with equal savagery when she dared to disagree with the left on one single thing. Elon Musk starts cutting wasteful spending, and he's the devil now. And people didn't just stop buying Teslas. They attacked his dealerships. They physically assaulted his interests. And he lost a lot of money for doing this. And he feels like all of that has now been discarded. All of his work has been cast aside. Nothing's being done. The big, beautiful bill is just more spending, world without end, amen. And he's not interested in talk of doing more spending cuts through later rescission bills, which is technically kind of the way you have to do it under congressional procedure. But Musk says that's just a dog and pony show, and they're never going to actually cut the spending. And I'm inclined to see it his way, honestly. I mean, I know they have to do the rescission process, but I am not optimistic that we have trillion dollar spending cuts coming in our future. So I get where he's coming from. The problem is that, as President Trump has correctly pointed out, if the big, beautiful bill doesn't pass, we're going to get walloped with a gigantic tax increase, one of the biggest that's ever been seen in the history of the United States. It will absolutely slaughter our economy. It'll plunge us into possibly a recession, even a depression, if we get walloped by a tax increase like that. And the Democrats are all for it. I mean, they're salivating over the prospect of murdering the American economy because they think they could pin it on Trump and the Republicans, and then they cruise back into power. And frankly, they don't give a damn about you and your small business anyway. So they don't care if the economy goes into the toilet as long as it helps them. So, I mean, Trump is absolutely right to point out that we have to pass this bill or it's not going to be pretty if we don't get something out there. So they're sort of like two immovable objects here, Trump and Musk. They both have a very valid point. And Trump is also right when he taunted Musk and said something about starting a new party is not the way to solve this. And that is true. If Musk starts a new party, and he could, guy's got billions of dollars. Perot did once upon a time, and it's going to end the same way it did with Ross Perot. If he gets a third party going, it'll siphon votes away from the Republicans. It'll fracture conservatism. The left will laugh all the way to the bank, and we get socialists in charge. We'll get the guy from New York, the communist guy that's running for mayor in New York. You'll get him everywhere. If Elon Musk starts a third party and shatters the fiscal responsibility conservative vote and just hands things on a platter to the Democrats. I really think the only way to fix this nightmare, and I agree it's tough. You know, Musk is right. It's not looking good for America's fiscal sanity. But the only way to fix this is to build up the Republican Party, the only party even nominally cares about reining in outrageous government spending and waste, and getting them to straighten up and fly right. And that's not easy either. I understand his frustration. But the third party route is not the way to go. And a knockdown, drag-out fight between two of the most important men in politics today, Trump and Musk, is not helpful. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
It's no surprise that people love their pets. In fact, 97% of pet owners consider them part of the family. Amazon's Jen Ray has more.
Amazon Pet Day makes caring for your pets easier than ever. The 48-hour sales event features thousands of deals with the convenience of Amazon's fast delivery. Whether you're welcoming a new puppy, upgrading essentials for a senior pet, or looking for products that pamper, there's something for everyone.
Nearly two-thirds of U.S. households have a pet. That's 86.9 million homes.
With so many households having pets, Amazon has something for every pet owner and their furry friends, from trusted basics to exciting new favorites across price points. Plus, Amazon is expanding its pet care offerings, now providing prescription pet medications on Amazon.com through VetSource, a leading pet pharmacy.
On May 13th and 14th, Amazon Pet Day will offer incredible deals, including on our most popular and pet-approved brands, like Purina Pro Plan, Iams, PetSafe, O'Norman, Ring, and more. Learn more at Amazon.com/Pet Day. As the school year winds down, many high school students are thinking ahead to what comes next. For some, that means staying academically engaged over the summer and preparing for the transition to college. Shauna Thayer, CEO of the online education platform Sophia Learning, has more.
Sophia Learning offers college-level courses that students can take at their own pace and are designed to transfer for credit. This summer, we're giving eligible rising high school juniors and seniors free access to 6 college-level courses. It's a great way for students to get a head start, see what college classes are really like, or try something new without the pressure.
A new survey finds that 72% of high school juniors and seniors who plan to attend college in the next 2 years feel they need to go to college to be successful, but 51% want more time to decide on a major.
Preparing for college is exciting, but can come with uncertainty. This program gives students a chance to learn at their own pace, gain confidence, and make informed choices about their future.
Learn more at sophia.org. That's Sophia with a PH.org.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. The Harvard University has been found to have violated the civil rights of its Jewish students by the Department of Health and Human Services for failing to protect them from the pro-Hamas anti-Semitic demonstrators that overwhelmed campuses following the October 7th Hamas terrorist attack in Israel. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, this is something Harvard is in a lot of trouble for right now. But long term, Harvard and indeed many other schools are in big trouble for systematically violating civil rights and practicing racial discrimination. They've been doing this stuff for years. It just got obvious and dangerous when the pro-Hamas guys went nuts and started taking over campuses in these angry demonstrations after the October 7th atrocity. But they've been discriminating against people over at the universities for a long time. The Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, Harmeet Dhillon, she said on Monday that virtually no American university has been following federal law on non-discrimination at admissions. And she said the most elite universities have outright racial quotas, which is actionable, illegal, blatant racial discrimination. She said that's almost all of them. And she said her division is very interested in going after them for all of this. Higher education is way worse than you might think it is if you don't attend yourself or if you don't have a child who is going through higher education right now. It has become almost like a nightmare vision of what people warned it might be back in the 80s and 90s when the real serious critique of public education began, which is kind of funny because that seems like ancient history from a billion years ago and all, like the Jurassic era, but it's not really that long ago. And the first cracks in the armor of public education, the first alarms being raised that at every level, all the way through the university system, it wasn't working very well and it was discriminating and the universities were practicing quotas. That stuff all started popping in the early 80s, which is, you know, 10 years, 15 years after public education as we know it came into existence. So it didn't take very long before the first cracks in the facade started showing up. And since I would say the late 90s to early 2000s, it's been fairly common knowledge that big universities were discriminating against whites, against Asians in various ways in admissions. They have blatant racial quotas. And in order to achieve those quotas of students of color, they have to say no thank you to people who are not students of color. And as they looked at their admissions, they began seeing that certain demographics they felt were overrepresented in universities because of achievement, because they were, you know, rocking up the good test scores and coming in there with great grades and very qualified for scholarships, for positions in universities. And those people tended to be white and Asian, quite disproportionately Asian in many cases. And so the university said, well, the only way to fix that and be racially fair to people of color is to junk the high-performing white and Asian students and set aside spots for other students that we prefer, that are preferred racial minorities. And so those people were getting into schools with much, much lower grades, and in some cases, frankly, unsatisfactory grades, which created a secondary scandal that we've been dealing with for years. And that is that a lot of people graduating from big universities are not really very well educated at all. And part of that is the university's curriculum being not so hot and spending a lot of time on political claptrap instead of actually teaching people stuff. That's a problem. But the other problem is that an awful lot of students admitted into big universities are not really qualified to be there because their scores were artificially inflated to get them through the quota system. And that is a terrible thing to do to somebody. I mean, the people doing all of this, this phenomenon I think we're all quite familiar with by now, of liberals, lefties, especially white upper-class left-wingers, they think they know better than you do if you're one of their preferred minorities. They view you in a very patronizing way, and they're not interested in what you say. They're going to tell you what's best for you, and they're going to force everybody else to give you what's best for you. So this is a problem that's been brewing for a long time. Here with us to talk about it is Adam Gillette, Presidency of Accuracy in Media. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So a lot of discrimination is being exposed at universities. But the big problem right now is Health and Human Services saying Harvard straight up violated the civil rights of its Jewish students by letting these Palestinian activists basically lock them out of the campus and in some cases literally lock them in closets and prevent them from getting an education.
Well, it's funny because we consistently see these news reports referring to them as, oh, well, they're pro-Palestinian protesters. These are protesters for Palestine. Well, if they actually were for Palestine, they would be as much against Hamas as the rest of us. These are pro-Hamas radicals who hate America, hate Western civilization, and many of them certainly hate Jewish students. And the university administration stood idly by while this went on for way too long.
I mean, it's really disgusting if you see the video of what some of these protests were like, what some of these activists were saying. This is undisguised genocidal, you know, kill the Jews type stuff that Jewish students were forced to witness when they came to school. Of course, they felt unsafe. They were unsafe. And then some of them were physically prevented from accessing their educations.
Well, I'll tell you, when I travel to Harvard, I'm not joking, I only visit with off-duty law enforcement because we've had them throw rocks at our mobile billboard. We've had our cameraman assaulted. I've been assaulted. These are violent, crazy radicals. You know, these universities are in many ways like the mainstream media in that they're living off the reputation of the past glories of people who were there before them. They still have the name Harvard. They've got a great med school, although it's probably co-opted by DEI. They've probably got a great engineering school. But really, higher education has become nothing more than far-left political organizations that also have an engineering school. You look how they've grown the size of administrative staff, not faculty, but administrative staff has grown on average by about 700% in the past 20 years. They've just staffed up with far-left activists. And unfortunately for the Jewish students, these far-left activists who claim to love diversity and inclusion don't extend that diversity, don't extend that inclusion towards anyone who likes America, towards Jewish students, heaven forbid, towards an evangelical Christian. These are intolerant fascist radicals.
Well, the other thing that's kind of striking is that for, 20 years now, we've been told universities had to be safe spaces and everybody's feelings had to be protected. And if you criticize people, well, that's the same as physically assaulting them. So we have to be exquisitely sensitive to their demands for the use of proper language. And then all of a sudden, Hamas murders a bunch of people over in Israel, and none of that applies to Jews anymore. You can straight up tell them you're going to kill them and shove them bodies in the ocean, and that's fine. Like, the university faculty's looked at this and said, nope, nothing here I need to deal with.
Exactly. We were told that speech was violence, but their actual violence isn't violence. You know, I was at Oakland in a hospital where they hired one of Columbia University's radicals in residency. And this radical's defender was arguing with me outside because I explained how they took over a building, they injured somebody, sent them to the hospital, they did a whole bunch of damages. And she said, well, was anyone killed? And I said, no. And she said, well, then that's not violence. So these people who say that speech is violence don't think physically assaulting someone is violence. These people who used to tell us about cultural appropriation are all happily wearing keffiyehs. It's amazing how the rules apply to us, but never to them.
Is Harvard going to face any real consequences for this? How much trouble are they in? I'll give you the last word.
Well, they have a major problem because they can either appease the federal government or appease their radical faculty, their radical staff, and their radical student body. If they go along with one, they're really going to anger the other.
Adam Gillette, president of Accuracy in Media, thanks for joining us today. I'm John Hayward, deputy national security editor at Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. We will be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
Summer can be a nonstop sprint for busy families. Between camps, road trips, and backyard barbecues, meals and snacks need to be quick, convenient, and kid-friendly. Lifestyle expert Yvette Rios has tips from the dairy aisle.
June is National Dairy Month, and dairy is a summertime lifesaver. So whether it's string cheese in a cooler, yogurt cups on the go, or even cottage cheese, these grab-and-go staples fuel kids without slowing parents down. Refrigerated doughs are another smart pick.
According to new research from the National Frozen and Refrigerated Foods Association, 77% of parents turn to dairy for convenient, kid-friendly summer solutions.
There are so many simple ways to build out a meal with dairy. Pasta salads with shredded cheese, veggie trays with ranch or sour cream dips, cottage cheese bowls topped with fruit and eggs for easy breakfast or protein-packed snacks.
To get more meal ideas and snack inspiration, visit easyhomemeals.com. That's easyhomemeals.com.
It's a well-known fact that guys often skip the doctor when they're sick and delay important health screenings. During Men's Health Month in June, encourage the men in your life to break that bad habit and take charge of their health. Vince Dorsey, a pharmacist and director of medical communications at Esperion Therapeutics, says a great way to start is with a cholesterol test.
The best defense is a good offense. High cholesterol has no symptoms. That's why it's called the silent killer. Don't put it off. Get your cholesterol tested and know your family's health history. You may not realize it, but high cholesterol can be an inherited genetic condition, putting otherwise healthy people, even in their 20s, at risk for heart disease. If you have high LDL or bad cholesterol, it is best to address this as soon as possible. There are ways to lower these levels, reducing your risk of heart attack or stroke.
If you or someone you love has high LDL cholesterol, your doctor may recommend lifestyle changes and medication to keep it in check. Visit heart.org to learn more.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. California Governor Gavin Newsom is suing Fox News, and his real target is President Donald Trump because it's all part of a dispute over Trump taking control of the California National Guard during the anti-immigration enforcement riots that were going down there, and Newsom not doing anything to stop those riots. So Newsom is trying to make a name for himself, counter Trump here with a big splashy lawsuit. Where is this all headed? And is Newsom or Trump right about exactly what happened in California and whether or not Newsom can be trusted with public safety? Here with us to talk about it is Ryan Tillman, a police officer, a pastor, CEO of Breaking Barriers United, and an independent candidate for governor of California. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show. Mr. Tillman, do we have you? Okay, looks like we're having a little trouble with the phone line. Ah, there we are. Can you hear me okay? Hello, Mr. Tillman.
Yeah, how are you doing today, John?
I'm doing well. Welcome to the show. We're talking about Newsom's suit against Fox News for saying that he lied about when he talked to Trump during the anti-immigration riots. And this is all just a part of a bigger battle, I think, between Newsom and Trump. Where do you come down on this? Is Newsom or Trump telling the truth about what happened during the riots?
Yeah, so unfortunately, man, what we're witnessing is a huge political showdown between Trump and Newsom. And you got all the civilians and even our first responders that are getting caught in the crossfire. I think when, you know, we had the recent riots, it was one way for Trump to show how weak Newsom is. But on the flip side of that, Newsom, he didn't really want to admit how bad things were. And so I could attest to how bad things were just firsthand because I have a lot of partners of mine who worked down there during the riots. And so I think what needs to happen is we need to stop, you know, having this political back and forth with one another and actually do what's right for the people.
I think some of the lawsuit that Newsom filed boils down to exactly what day it was based on the time difference between Washington and California as to whether Trump was telling the truth when he said Newsom hadn't spoken to him in a day or something like that. That seems like an awful lot of hair splitting when, as you pointed out, the bigger issue is just how bad things were in California. And Newsom very clearly was not on top of that situation. He was either unaware of it, studiously unaware of it, or he was misrepresenting how bad things were. And Trump did need to step in and do something for public safety. That does not reflect well on the governor of California.
No, it doesn't reflect well at all, especially when you have buildings being burned down, you have graffiti, and then you also have people getting hurt. And sadly, I sat there and watched on the TV, watched all of our first responders being attacked over these, this immigration crisis. And, you know, when you have the mayor and the governor that's not willing to step in and intervene, it brings a lot of hardship. And so at some point, you have to make a decision, an executive decision, to move forth. And the last thing I want to bring up is the fact that, you know, we have to understand we're living in some, you know, some turbulent times. Law enforcement right now specifically is understaffed and overworked. It's the biggest issue in law enforcement. And so that's another reason why, you know, it may have been a good opportunity to activate the National Guard. And also the last thing to point out is it's not new. We've activated the National Guard for the George Floyd protests, for the Rodney King riots, and so many other things. So it wasn't like it was a new thing, a new affair to activate the National Guard.
That's the thing about violence in the streets. It happens fast. Things develop very quickly. A protest that was just a little boisterous can get out of hand in a matter of minutes. And it takes on-the-spot decisive leadership to ensure that the public will remain safe. And I think the problem is that when you have a politician like Newsom, who's only caring about his ideology, his national stature, his next maybe run for the presidency, he was not watching minute to minute and making aggressive decisions on behalf of the public trust. No one can claim that that's what he was doing.
No, and what people want somebody that to be strong in chaos. They want somebody that can bring calm to chaos. And despite the political side that you're on, whether you're on the left or the right, I think everybody wants to have a good, decent quality of life. And that they had that opportunity. They had that opportunity to bring calm to chaos. And I know there was a lot of rhetoric saying that, you know, the National Guard kind of, you know, incited the situation even more. But, you know, that kind of goes to show what kind of society that we live in when you're saying that the National Guard or any type of police-type presence is going to incite something. That shows that we've just allowed people to do what they want to do. So what we need to do, especially in California, is we have to be able to restore the power that, you know, our local law enforcement agencies have and do it courteously and appropriately, but in a manner that's saying, you know, hey, we are here to keep you safe despite what's going on in the political rhetoric.
Another thing about these riots that makes them volatile and dangerous is that they are not organic. They're organized. They're often funded by shadowy figures outside of the state. And some of these rioters are trained activists who have access to essentially combat equipment that's provided to them to go into street battles. And I don't see any curiosity from Gavin Newsom or from California authorities over how organized these riots were or who did it. I do see the federal government asking those questions, but I don't see Gavin Newsom seeming very curious about who financed all this destruction in the streets.
It should definitely be something that should be investigated, number one. But the only way to do that is by actually taking people into custody. And for the last several years here in California, we've tied the hands of our local law enforcement leaders and officials to go out there and do their job. But if we actually got some of these people in custody, I think you could actually trace down the rabbit hole and actually find out who is not only sponsoring and financing this chaos, but actually get to the root of it and say, how do we avoid this from happening in the future? But you're absolutely right. I think for me, one of the things I realized is you have all these outside entities that come in to cause all this chaos within the community, and the only people that suffer are the people that actually live in these communities. So we have to be better, and that's what leadership needs. That's the type of leadership we need in California that says, hey, you know, despite what my political side is, whether it be left or right, I'm going to do what's right and what's in the best interest of the people.
You mentioned earlier about first responders coming under fire. That unfortunately literally happens from time to time. Just recently in Idaho, where we had someone taking shots and killing firefighters, this deranged individual they stopped up there. When you are a firefighter, a paramedic, a police officer, and you're responding to a dangerous situation, you're going into you don't know what, and you don't know what threats are waiting for you. And now we've seen evidence, as in the Idaho shootings, of people that deliberately create situations where they know the first responders will come, and then they attack them.
Yes, and that's one of the most biggest fears for law enforcement or first responders in general. You know, typically it's obviously, you know, police officers that are on edge every single time you go to a call because you know that there are people that are anti the establishment and we are the first extension of the government, so they're looking at causing harm to us. And it's not typical that you see firefighters that are caught in the crossfire, but we've seen it more in recent years where firefighters are getting caught in the crossfire because of, you know, the political polarizations that are going on in the society that we live in. I never thought I'd ever see a day where we have to actually ask, you know, firefighters to keep their head up, not for just the fires, but also somebody that's trying to take them out with a rifle.
You also mentioned how underfunded and understaffed many first responder departments are. That's been a problem for a long time, but it got more acute after the Black Lives Matter protests and defund the police got started. And now we have the candidate for mayor in New York saying he's going to completely disband the police because he thinks they're you know, anti-gay fascists or whatever he called them. So you've got a lot of these leaders talking about extremely trimming down or even abolishing police departments. And as you said, that creates a volatile situation because if you don't have staffing, then you have people that are underworked, that are going in without the manpower they need, and are not ready to deal with the suddenly violent situation that presents itself to them.
If you ask me, that's a clear example of the vocal minority shouting out this, you know, craziness from, you know, the highest mountaintop. You know, I think we saw after the Black Lives Matter movement that I've always said it was a brilliant plan for a demonic demise. And what I mean by that is, you know, who wouldn't get behind the fact that, you know, Black Lives Matter? I mean, everybody can get behind that. But at the same time, what they did was they pushed an agenda that was anti-black. And, you know, they got this movement of defund the police, and we're actually paying the price for it now. I have quite a number of friends of mine who actually were not, you know, pro-police. And over the years, when they started seeing the lawlessness occurring in their communities, when they started seeing the quality of life deteriorate right before their very eyes, they not only did they realize the necessity for a really good staff police department, but they also understood the necessity of actually pouring in and investing into our first responders. I don't understand where the logic is behind taking money away from the very mere entity that's put in place to keep you safe. We invest so much money and dollars into other things that are not priorities, whether it be forms of entertainment, whether it be forms of sports, and I'm an athlete myself. But we want to take away, you know, money from the entity that was established to keep our streets safe. That's almost like saying, let's defund pilots and let's defund doctors. Let's see how that plays out if we decide to do that.
Are we facing an elevated terror threat right now after the U.S. bombing of Iran's nuclear facilities?
You know, I would honestly say that we are facing an elevated terrorist attack, but it's nothing new. I truly believe that over the years, since we've allowed a lot of people to come across our borders and not really have a checks and balances to who's coming across, there's a lot of, you know, sleeper cells and terrorists lying in wait. But, you know, this has occurred not just over the last year or 2 years, but, you know, for the last few years across our country. My biggest, you know, encouragement for people is to always walk around, keep your head up and identify people, and not, don't walk around being terrified, but just intentive about, you know, what your surroundings. What do they say? See something, say something. And that's still relevant today.
That is good advice. And we have had some pretty eye-popping arrests in the last couple of days of people who might be affiliated with terrorism or might be a threat. So definitely something that we all need to be aware of, both at the individual and at the government level. Ryan Tillman, police officer, pastor, CEO of Breaking Barriers United, and an independent candidate for governor of California. Thanks for joining us today. I'm John Hayward, deputy national security editor for Breitbart News. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
Planning a summer road trip? You're not alone. Over 75% of Americans are hitting the road this season. But before you pack the snacks and playlists, make sure your car and your car insurance are road trip ready. Start with a full vehicle checkup. Brakes, oil, tires, wipers. Pack an emergency kit. Learn how to change a tire and bring a backup map because GPS is not always reliable out there. Understanding your coverage is important as well. Although many people think they understand their insurance, a recent survey found 96% of drivers misunderstood at least one part of their policy. And that's where the General can help. With our app, you can review your policy, file a claim fast, or get a quote in 2 minutes or less. At the General, our mission is to give people a break when they need it most. And that's why we've made managing your car insurance easier, faster, and smoother, so you can stay focused on the road ahead. Planning a trip? Visit thegeneral.com so you can hit the road with confidence.
With the cost of living rising dramatically, budgets are tight and customers are looking for ways to stretch their dollars. T-Mobile has launched two new experience plans, adding industry-leading value and savings, plus a 5-year price guarantee, so customers can rest assured that the price of their talk, text, and data stays the same. The Experience Beyond plan includes over $200 in added value for every line every month, with satellite connectivity, yearly device upgrades, and an entertainment streaming bundle that includes Apple TV+, Hulu, Netflix, and more. For more information, visit t-mobile.com, sponsored by T-Mobile.
National Iced Tea Day is just around the corner, and it's the perfect time to celebrate everyone's favorite summertime beverage. As a tea sommelier, I'm always looking for tea products with high-quality ingredients that are sourced responsibly. When it comes to a bottled tea, my go-to is Tea Java. It's brewed in small batches using quality tea leaves from Java, Indonesia. No sugar, no calories, and no added preservatives. Just a refreshing, authentic tea like I brewed it myself. Tea Java is a must-have this summer. You can learn more at teajava.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart, and sitting in for Alan today. President Trump's big, beautiful bill has passed the Senate. Vice President J.D. Vance had to cast a tie-breaking vote this morning. There were rumbles this morning that a deal had been reached, and that does indeed seem to be the case. So on it goes to the president's desk, but the budget battle continues and may even be getting more intense with the feud between President Trump and his erstwhile supporter, Elon Musk. Here with us to talk about it is Kent Strang, Managing Director for Americans for Prosperity. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Thank you for having me back. What a great day for America.
It was a pretty exciting couple of days there in the Senate. They worked all through the night. They had all these test votes and so forth they had to do, and they punched through all of them. And then they finally made the bill happen, which is definitely a huge political victory for President Trump, although there are critics of that bill from the conservative side, like Elon Musk, and they're not happy.
Sure. I mean, there are critics of this bill, but let's remember what this bill does. First and foremost, this bill avoids the biggest tax hike in American history. It provides important resources to secure our southern border. It unleashes American energy with onshore and offshore drilling, puts an end to Biden's war on energy, and it's going to help small businesses grow with the equipment expensing so folks can expand their businesses, hire more employees. This is a really good bill for America, and looking forward to see the economic growth that comes from it.
I feel like a lot of this bill, especially in the later stages as it went through the Senate, and it changed a bit, as bills often do, and some of its people in the House that voted for it didn't like the changes being made. But it seemed like a lot of what happened in its final form really buttressed what President Trump and the Republicans can take to the middle class voters now in the midterm elections and say, we're the party of you. We're the party that cares about you, small businesses, about the things that matter in your life. And the Democrats are out there floating in deep space just talking about nonsense. But we actually care about what's important to you.
I think that's 100% right. I mean, let's look at what the last 4 years when the Democrats had control, what it did to our economy. Bidenomics was a result of $5.5 trillion in wasteful spending on green new energy scams that overcooked our economy. It led to 40-year high inflation, and that made the average American family pay $11,400 more just to maintain their lifestyle. And now what you see Republicans and President Trump doing is exactly what you mentioned, this comeback tour of we're going to make it easier for the middle class. We're going to ensure that the tax cuts and the rates across the board are permanent, that we're going to have pro-business, pro-family policies that make it easier to get by and to get out of the malaise of the 4 years of Bidenomics.
Now, rosy glows from political triumphs may fade quickly with elections coming some distance in the future here, but I have seen it said that this last maybe 2 to 3 weeks has one of the best news cycles an American president has ever had. Trump is just riding as high as you can ride after everything he's done has turned into a win, including some stuff that was supposed to be doomsday. I mean, the tariffs were supposed to finish us off, but we're going to plunge into a depression. Nothing could be further than the truth. The stock market's booming. I mean, everywhere you look, it's coming up Trump.
That's right. Record high on the S&P, and you're seeing those trade deals. The so-called economic experts were wrong that we were going to already be in a recession. And again, I think this is passing the Senate, passing the One Big Beautiful Bill is just the next example of we're going to make good on President Trump's promises, the promises that Congress made, keep our taxes low, ensure that we avoid the biggest tax hike in American history, secure our border, unleash American energy. We're seeing gas prices go down as we're in the summer driving season, help those small businesses grow. I mean, absolutely. I think the White House and Republicans are on a roll. And what's going to be so critical for them to do right now is once this passes the House and it gets to President Trump's desk, hopefully by Independence Day, Republicans are going to go have to sell the good parts of this bill to the American people. And of course, the Democrats are going to try to do everything they can to say that this bill doesn't help people. But the proof's going to be in the pudding. And hopefully the Republicans are able to go and demonstrate to the American people all the good that is in this bill.
Now, no sooner will Independence Day be behind us than next week another important event is coming. It's the deadline for the tariffs. The tariff negotiating deadline is next week. And all these other countries are supposed to start coming up with deals or face the full wallop of 20, 30, 40% tariffs President Trump's throwing at them.
Yeah, President Trump has certainly used targeted tariffs as a negotiating tactic, and we've seen a number of countries come to the table and renegotiate. I think in a perfect world, we would have zero tariffs or incredibly small barriers to trade, but President Trump feels like the United States isn't getting good deals, and he wants to negotiate those, and he's a master negotiator. We're talking about the man that wrote the art of the deal, and he's demonstrated the ability to work with other countries and bring them to the table and negotiate. And I think he's going to continue to see more of that. I think he was saying a couple weeks ago that we would just send letters and set the rates if countries don't come. And the countries that come sooner to negotiate are going to leave with better deals. And so I think it's great that we're bringing people to the table to have discussions on trade, and we're seeing manufacturing come back to the United States, leading to more jobs and more investment in America. And so we want to continue to see investment in America and lower trade barriers.
I saw an interesting tidbit along those lines from Indonesia. The day before yesterday, they had a conference of their economic ministers. They basically admitted, yeah, we've got really high tariffs and barriers to entry and bureaucracy here. We're going to fix that. Basically said Trump is right about that. And to sweeten the deal, they said they were going to throw in a sweetheart partnership on critical minerals out of Indonesia to try to get Trump to lower the tariffs against them. That would be pretty remarkable if he winds up getting stuff like that, people just bringing things like mineral packages to the table to try to win our business back.
President Trump has really been interested in the mineral packages, whether it's talking about it with China. He was doing some of that with the Middle East, and that has been something that he is looking for as our economy, the future of our economy grows. And so I think that those countries bringing those sort of things to the table are good for them. They're good for us. And that's what we want trade to be, where we both have rising tides and have strong economies across the world. Absolutely.
Another part of that amazing news cycle Trump has been having is that the Canadians backed away from their tax they were going to put on tech imports, which sure does look like them blinking pretty hard and deciding they don't want to have a big tariff punch out.
Absolutely. And Canada is going to have to come to the table. It looks like they're making some progress on that. And I think another thing that as we look at what's happening in the Middle East right now, you know, one of the biggest importers of American energy is coming from Canada. And so we want to have good trade relations with Canada to ensure that the goods and services that we get from Canadians is at low cost. The energy is coming in at low cost, and Canada has traditionally been a great partner of the United States, and we want to ensure that we can trade freely amongst the countries, and hopefully the two sides there and two governments there get a good trade deal for both countries.
Do you think in the wake of the big, beautiful bill passing that we really are going to get big spending cuts? It's a big point of contention with Elon Musk and Doge that they don't feel their recommendations were followed. Trump said there's going to be more spending cuts to come. Do you think that's in the cards, or we're going to get the rescissions bills?
We have to. We have to cut the wasteful spending that's happening in Washington, D.C. We can do that through rescissions packages. We may even be able to do that through another reconciliation package. We've got to end the wasteful spending.
Kent Strang, Managing Director for Americans for Prosperity. Thanks for joining us today. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor of Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Thanks very much, one and all, for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.